Hello and welcome to Quilt Achieviate's Markets Uncut podcast, your weekly insight into the topics and trends that we've been exploring for you here at Quilt Achieviate. Remember, so you don't miss future episodes, be sure to hit the follow button on whichever streaming platform you are listening on, or by following hashtag QC Weekly Comment on Instagram. I'm your host this week, Harry Gibbon, investment manager based out of our London office. And this week, I'm pleased to be joined by Richard Carter, head of fixed interest research, and Phil Ross, equity research analyst who specializes in utilities and insurance. Good morning to you both. Richard, you first. The battle between the US and China continues. Following the tariff truce on May 12th, we don't seem to have lasted a month. The key reasons behind the breakdown between the US and China at the moment is that the US is accusing China of slowing the pace of rare earth mineral exports. As a reminder, China produces about 60% of the world's rare earths and processes nearly 90%. China has accused the US of discriminatory and restrictive measures, which includes warnings against the use of Huawei chips, the halt of sales of chip design software, and the cancellation of visas for Chinese students. The comments between the two nations has led to a drop in Asian markets on Friday, as well as US futures. It also prompted Trump to extol that China had totally violated its agreement with the US and claimed so much for Mr. Nice Guy, which is a name I'm assuming only Republican hardliners call him. Richard, we saw enormous tariffs put on the US's trading partners on the 2nd of April, most of which were removed a little over a month later. Now we're here, less than a month after May 12th reprieve. What has happened in your market over this tumultuous period? Do you see us going back to the pre-May 12th tariff regime?
I certainly hope not, and I certainly don't think so, Harry, because I think that caused such upset to markets, to the, you know, to the dollar, to treasury markets as well. But I don't think they're going to go back to that situation. And it's good to see that, you know, with this, as you mentioned, a sort of US-China trade agreement, plus all the pausing of some of the reciprocal tariffs, that markets have recovered. I wouldn't, you know, we've certainly seen a good recovery in stock markets. We've seen a little bit of a stabilization in the dollar over the last sort of couple of weeks, and treasury markets as well. But I hope we're not going back to that. But the situation between US and China, as you mentioned, is not great. They've got, you know, there's a bigger picture sort of great power rivalry between them over various things, not just trade, but the situation in Asia, around particularly around Taiwan. So that's not going to go away. But it's a shame that, like you say, within 1 month of the agreement being struck, they started to fall out again. I mean, in some ways, you know, markets a little bit moved on from the trade worries onto, you know, fiscal deficits and the whole problem around the US debt situation and the sort of credit rating downgrade. But now, you know, with the latest developments and obviously the steel and aluminium tariffs going on as well, it seems to be back onto trade, which is pretty depressing in a way. And that's even before you mention the whole uncertainty around like the various court rulings that we've had over the last week or so around whether these tariffs are illegal. So it's very hard for markets to have any certainty about exactly what's going to happen on the trade situation. And that's not good as well, not just for markets, but also, I think, for US consumers.
Yeah, I'm always amazed that what goes on in the US, sort of, especially under a Trump presidency, and you just, although we do have our issues on this side of the pond, I just don't think you'd see a lot of this sort of PM being taken to court and all those sorts of things. So it's certainly kept us interested over the last few months. Given the investors' despair, though, US policy uncertainty since Trump was inaugurated, it's no surprise you'll hear to understand that the US funds have seen a lot of outflows. And as you mentioned, the US dollar has dropped. We see a lot of this money going into European funds, and we've got an ECB interest rate decision this week, Richard. What are you expecting there, and what's the lay of the land there?
Yeah, this is the big theme now, and I think, you know, we can talk about the sort of weekly flip-flop on tariff policy, but the big picture is it's undermining US credibility. And like you say, investors potentially going to vote with their feet. They could move out the dollar into things like the euro and other currencies. They can move out of US treasuries into other bond markets, and they can move out of US equities into Europe and you know, the Far East and wherever, the UK maybe as well. So this is a theme that could have implications for investors going on for, you know, a number of years. And people say, oh, you know, it's hard to find alternatives to, you know, the sort of deep and liquid US markets. But at the moment, people seem to be more than happy to move to Europe or wherever else. I mean, the situation in Europe is okay. There's obviously a big sort of trying to, you know, a bit more spending on infrastructure and defence. But the economy is, for now, you know, fairly sluggish. Inflation has come down, and that's why the ECB is likely to cut by another 25 basis points this week. You know, you've got the situation in the US and UK. Inflation is a bit sticky. Central banks are a bit reluctant to cut rates. But that's not really been the case in Europe. And actually, as I say, rates are going to come down again this week.
Brilliant. Thank you, Richard. Lots to keep an eye out for this week as well. Morning, Phil. Thanks for joining us. Usually I'll be talking to Richard about US policy. I managed to swerve a question there so I could talk to you about it, Phil. And I'm going to leverage your utilities expertise to talk to you about Trump's big, beautiful bill. I sit on the sustainable investment team here at Quilter Cheviot and often get asked how our sustainable strategy will perform over the next 4 years under Trump. A lot of what I talk about is how we are diversified by investment theme and that we aren't reliant on US renewables policy. But let's have a little bit of a look at what's been going on over the last few months. Phil, similar to US trade policy, there's been a lot of volatility in the renewables policy, specifically in the US. Can you take us through the changes regarding the Inflation Reduction Act we've seen over the last month or so? But firstly, what support did the industry provide through the Act?
Sure, good question, and morning everyone. So the Inflation Reduction Act, or the IRA for short, was something that was brought in August 2022 under the Biden administration, of course. And, well, the title, as it suggests, is to reduce inflation. Namely domestic inflation, which at the time was partly driven by energy costs, but also to tackle climate change. So the IRA includes a combination of grants, loans, tax provisions, and other incentives, all with the aim of accelerating the development and deployment of clean energy, clean vehicles, clean buildings, clean manufacturing, et cetera, et cetera. And this sort of big price tag that was sat atop the IRA was something like $370 billion. And I guess the issue there is that there's no payment of this. It's just that the companies involved in delivering clean energy end up paying over the course of the next decade or so. That $370 billion is reduced taxation take. So what it effectively does is the state is putting the cost of developing clean solutions onto the private sector, which I think makes sense. So that you have some European companies like EDPR, half of their sort of generation portfolio is weighted towards the US, particularly towards onshore wind and solar. Those kind of companies from the what looked like it would be a years long increase in investment in generation production of clean energy. So that was a boon for the sector. But then kind of fast forward into to 2024, late 24, when the Trump administration is incoming. And I think on Trump's second day, the busy administration ordered federal agencies to cease all action under the IRA, including electric vehicle charging, I must add. So that placed the sector, particularly companies, again, like EDPR, RWE, that had a big deal towards renewables, placed the sector very much into uncertainty because we didn't know what was going to happen. What happens generally in markets, and this is not just related to utilities, but when investors are faced with uncertainty, they tend to price in the worst case scenario. So you fast forward again and we get through to May the 12th, 25 now, and the very first draft of the update of the IRA, the budget reconciliation bill, in short, the changes to the IRA were actually less bad than feared. So there was a slow phase out of the benefits of the IRA, these tax credits. So the tax credit things like tax credit transferability, that allows renewable developers to sell the anticipated tax credits to corporate buyers. So a corporate buyer, like, I don't know, Walmart, for instance, can buy a renewable tax credit, offset its own tax bill, and help fund the development of renewable energy, even though in this scenario, Walmart might have nothing to do with that. So it just made the economics for those kind of projects much better. So yeah, the May the 12th development was positive for the industry. So the stocks with weighting towards US and renewables did well. And then we had a change on the 21st of May, just about 9 days later, where the updated draft going through the Senate featured some rather more bleak changes to the tax credit picture. Basically, in summary, the Senate managed to crowbar in some changes, which meant that any project that did not start construction within 60 days of reenactment of the proposed bill would not be eligible for tax credits, and also projects that did not enter operation by the end of 2028 would also not be eligible for any tax credits. And that was quite a big change versus the more generous phase out of the previous draft just 9 days earlier. So yes, quite a lot of uncertainty still in the sector and some U-turns from the administration. But of course, the bill is still moving through the legislative process in the US. So who knows what might happen next?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting time for renewables. Certainly, it's definitely worth pointing out that across our strategy, a very small proportion of the portfolio actually is exposed or really directly exposed to these sorts of credits. We do hold a small position in EDPR, which we do manage. But yeah, it's been difficult following stocks like that over the last sort of 6 months, 7 months. Do you see a turnaround? So once the bill passes, you mentioned there that that a lot of the credits are coming out of the system. What's the future for these renewables companies then, Phil? If that does happen?
Yeah, it's a good question, Harry. So I think if you take EDPR, for example, that you mentioned, in the last month, encapsulating both of these changes, that the stock is still up. It's up, I think, 7 or 8%. So on the more positive May the 12th announcement, the stock was up 10 or 11. It was down 5 or 6 on the change a few days later, which tells you that net, there is still some positivity here for renewables companies if you compare to IRA stopping tomorrow. So there is still some tax benefit coming through in the next couple of years, or anticipated that to be the case. And I think you have to remember that a lot of these companies, they start the development of projects such as, you know, solar farm construction, onshore wind farm construction. These things start years in advance. So actually there is a pipeline of development on behalf of, again, say ADBR, RWE, that's already happening. So they've kind of protected the benefit from the tax credits, from the IRA, as it were. The future is a little bit less certain, because I think beyond 2028, 2029, it may be the case that actually there are no tax credits in place if the bill as it stands passes in its current format. What that will mean is that the economics for onshore wind farm generation are a bit more challenged. So if you look at the numbers today, there's maybe only 2 or 3 of the regions out of 10 or 12 different regions in the US where the economics of onshore wind farms makes sense. Solar actually is a lot more cost competitive. So even if you remove the subsidies for solar farm construction, it probably still makes sense to be building new solar projects as opposed to trying to procure expensive new gas turbines to burn gas to produce electricity. So it's not catastrophic for the industry. It's challenging for onshore wind. But actually, if you go back and look at what these companies were doing in 2024, again, the likes of EDPR had actually pivoted somewhat towards more solar generation already. I don't necessarily think this was in anticipation of what the bill would say, but they previously, EDPR were a bit more onshore wind heavy, and they've switched towards more solar generation. So they have, maybe by accident, but hopefully so, future-proofed somewhat their development pipeline. But yeah, it never helps when we do have uncertainty a bit further down the road, even if it's sort of 4 or 5 years out.
Yeah, it's interesting economics at the moment, isn't it? That whilst this might become more expensive to build these assets, the current listed assets are actually trading quite cheaply. So you would think that that discount does come in if you do have players that are wanting to get into the market but don't have the ability to afford the funding.
Absolutely, yeah. I think it. You still have this kind of 4 to 5 year protected pipeline, and you can still look, if you're building a new facility today to produce electricity, maybe you want to arrange that so you can provide power to data centers, AI type trends. And you know, a lot of companies now are talking about signing long-term deals with the big tech companies or with hyperscalers, etc. And that can give you, as an energy company, you know, multi-year guaranteed line of sight on income from these projects. So I think what it does is that it means that the likes of these developers have to be a bit more suspect and put a bit more time into working out the economics of these projects. And you've seen some companies increase hurdle rates for returns, that sort of thing, be a bit more selective, which I think makes sense. It's imposing a bit more of a discipline on the sector. I think we're all hoping that actually once the bill moves through the legislative process, it gets a bit kinder. I mentioned solar and I mentioned companies pivoting a bit more to solar development in 2024. If you look at the location of those developments, I think around 70% of new solar additions in the US were in Republican controlled states. So actually the legislators on the ground, the appetite, I think, for removing subsidies would be quite low. Particularly with midterm elections on the horizon. Again, it's difficult to predict the direction of this administration, but there are things, if you look underneath the headlines, which are a bit more positive than these U-turn changes that we see that tend to grab the news.
Yeah, I know we're at risk of just turning into talking about US utilities, and maybe we change the name of the podcast, but that's maybe something for the future. But yeah, there's definitely talk about more premium assets and higher hurdle rates at the moment. But thank you very much, Phil. Thank you. Thank you, Richard, as well. Thank you for your great insights, and thank you to you all for listening. If you enjoyed our discussion on the podcast today, we'd love to hear from you. So please review the show now, wherever you're listening, and share it on your socials, tagging us at Quilt Achieve It. To make sure you don't miss a future episode, tap the subscribe button. We'll be back next week. In the meantime, head over to our website, www.quiltachieveit.com, where you can read the accompanying market overview, as well as subscribe to our weekly comment newsletter. You can also stay up to date with our thoughts on market news, industry insights, and our upcoming events and webinars on our website or on our social media pages. Finally, if you have any questions you'd like to ask one of our experts for our next podcast, simply ask them via the weekly comments page on our website. And that's it for today. So thank you, Richard and Phil, for your time, and to you all for listening. See you next time.